Welcome back to the Bravo Dog Knowledge Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Erdman. I'm a certified dog trainer and behavior consultant. I own bravodog.ca, and you can find me at Bravo Dog Training on Instagram, as well as thementorshipcollective.com. Today's going to be a great episode that I hope you enjoy. We have some fantastic guests. We've got Dawn Hutton of Toronto Running Dogs, and we have Laura Nativo of Nativo Pet Family. We are talking about dog training on television and what that entails, the ins and outs, the goods, the not so goods. So we hope you enjoy this episode. It's almost an anniversary, I would say. We've had over 200,000 downloads of the episodes since we launched the podcast, which is fantastic. And Dawn was actually my first guest on the podcast, so it's a bit of a milestone. Hope you enjoy it and learn a few things along the way.
Perfect.
Welcome.
I just got notifications that Bravo Dog is now streaming live on Facebook. So I think it's working.
Imagine. So it is working. So we're good. Okay, that's great. Well, welcome to the broadcast, you guys. This is pretty exciting. Haven't done a lot of these live broadcasts, but the great thing is that not only can people see what we're doing, our dogs behind us and things like that, but also they can ask questions, which please do if you're out there connecting. And of course, they can also catch this later because we're recording it. So it's very cool. But I'll start by welcoming the guests today. Let's start with you, Dawn. Dawn Hutton, please introduce yourselves.
Sure. Hi, my name is Dawn Hutton. I'm a Karen Pryor certified trainer, and I've pursued other education on top of that. I have a small business called Running Dogs Training and Behavior. And I'm really excited to be here and get into this conversation.
Excellent. Welcome. And what kind of dogs are you typically working with? What's your range of experience?
Sure. Yeah, I have. I've got a real soft spot for like Huskies and Northern Mutts in particular. I kind of got into the professional world of working with dogs through outdoor tourism and outdoor education. So I actually used to guide dog sledding tours for years and worked with kennels with hundreds and hundreds of dogs. It was a really, really wild time. But by the time I left those jobs, I knew that I wasn't really going to probably do anything else but work with dogs and for the rest of my life. But then here in the city, I work with all sorts of dogs from a training perspective and behaviorally. Any type of dog, any breed, any behavior issue, I'm pretty excited to get involved with. But yeah,
thanks. Excellent. Welcome. And then Laura Nativo, please introduce yourself.
Hi. Well, first of all, I didn't know that about your background, Dawn. So we had to chat offline because I'm like, I want to hear all about the sled dogs. Hi, everyone. For anyone who doesn't know me, my name is Laura Nativo. I'm a certified professional dog trainer, also a Karen Pryor Academic graduate. Woohoo! Big clicker training nerd. I've been training dogs for, oh my gosh, almost 20 years. I feel really old. my first dog, Preston, who passed about a year ago at 17, he was my heart. He was my inspiration, a reason I got into training. And I like to say that I've been doing positive training before I knew it was a thing. It was just always so natural to like have this relationship with this little dog who had so much love to give. And he's changed my life, and I will forever be in the dog industry and just really grateful to be here with two of you are like my favorite social media dog trainers. So I'm excited to get to know each of you better.
Wow. Well, that's kind of you to say. Thank you. Well, thanks to both of you guys for taking out the time today, because I think this topic is an important one, and one that there's dog training television shows, and that's really what we're talking about today, is that they've been around for a long time. They're not going anywhere. It's good entertainment. We all love dogs, but there are some things that people should know about these shows, right? So I'm going to ask you guys a couple of questions. And I would love to know, Laura, because you've got this TV background and movie background, you've got a great take on what sort of goes on behind the scenes. Tell me, like, what do you think producers, how do they choose who's going to be, you know, the host of these shows? How does that work?
Okay, so, you know, I would like to say it's all about your education and how, what sort of certifications and credentials you have and how many dogs' lives you've changed. It has nothing to do with that. Unfortunately, Hollywood is still an industry which is about entertainment. At the end of the day, these TV shows exist to service advertisers. That's how the networks are making their money. So one of the biggest challenges with dog training shows, whether it's a reality show or it's a competition show or it's a training show, is it's all about entertainment from the Hollywood producer perspective. So we can get into the challenges from a training perspective, but usually when it comes to casting, they're looking for big, larger than life personalities. They're looking for, you know, emotional stories about a lot of times you'll see with different hosts, they'll kind of tap into like their background and their history and like how can, you know, that impact the audience in a way that causes some type of emotion. And really it's, you know, the very last thing is credentials. And it's kind of sad how even, I mean, I've been doing this on television for over 12 years now. And still, like when we were casting my show, I'm CPDT and I'm KPA, but my producers were looking for a co-host. And I love you guys, Jim and Jen, but like it wasn't about who else has qualifications to match. Fortunately, we were able to bring in someone who I fought for, who is a science-based trainer, who's actually becoming a veterinary behaviorist. But that was like a very rare case where because I had a little bit of power, I was the first person attached to the development deal for the show. Usually if it's just producers, they're strictly looking at casting tapes. And so you'll see, you know, a casting notice and they'll be like, do you love dogs? Are you a pet psychic, a dog walker, a dog trainer? We've got a new behavior show. And they really like, you know, they care about what do you look like? What do you sound like? And how are you going to create entertainment for the audience?
Right.
Yeah. That makes sense. Disappointing, yet understandable. So once the production is in place and everything's rolling, the money is being spent, once it's been produced, how is the chances of that being stopped very, very on the low side, would you say? Because they've invested so much money in the production.
So are you kind of referring to some of the controversies surrounding certain shows and the potential to get them taken off air once the train is rolling?
Yeah, precisely. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it depends. We've seen a lot throughout history with different shows and the way that audiences have reacted. Generally, by the time the audience and the general public knows about a show, so much money has gone into the production, the development, the casting, the post-production, which is, you know, another huge expense. The advertisers have all signed off. Generally, at that point, you know, unfortunately, sometimes even if a show is not well received by, you know, the training community. I know there have been cases where IAABC and some of the training organizations have written statements. At that point, it doesn't matter, especially if the show has numbers. At the end of the day, it's all about are people watching the show? And in some ways, it's almost like the controversy adds to their value because the more eyeballs they get, the more people are rewatching clips on YouTube and, oh my gosh, I heard the show is awful. Let's go, you know, watch it on whichever network. Unfortunately, some of them, they, you know, provided that there's not like, you know, no one's going to show a dog being killed on television, but like anything up until that point, it's really about, does this controversy sell? And, you know, I was on the Hallmark channel, to Hallmark. They fired me for speaking out against a particular episode of a particular training show from a particular dog trainer. So, you know, it's, that's a whole nother story, but I mean, I feel that strongly to like, hi to Hallmark.
Wow.
They don't care. All they care about is are people tuning in and are advertisers, as long as the advertisers don't pull out. Now that's the thing when we talk about like, you know, if we're not comfortable with something as the training community, if you can hit the advertisers, then I think you can make a difference.
Excellent point. Wow. So Dawn, I'd love to hear from you, from your perspective, the typical dog training shows that we're seeing on TV, you know, what's wrong with them? Is there anything, what are some red flags that you see typically?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, I can be really picky and get at like a lot of different things, but off of what Laura said, I think, you know, it's clear that like ratings are going to be paramount, you know, and sometimes controversy does that. And I think that, you know, the drama is going to really like drum that up. When I think of TV shows that I've seen in the past, I think of these shots that I'm sure they've just got a GoPro on a selfie stick and they're getting really in close and agitating a dog so they can get those snarly sort of before scenes. And I think that's highly problematic. I think trying to kind of, it's one thing in movies and stuff. I know we can train dogs to do sort of dramatic things and not have to have it come at such a cost to their well-being. But it's really hard to know what the sort of ethics are behind it. And it's easy to be really skeptical. So I worry about the dogs that are in the actual episodes. But I think the even bigger issue, not to put them in the backseat because it's like literally their lives, but it's just broadcasting such sort of dangerous and harmful approaches to engaging with your dog. It's like not even on a training level, but just on like a, how do you relate to your dog? And I think from the more famous shows of the past, I think one of the biggest beefs that I had was that so much, every single technique, every sort of bit of philosophy seemed to come back around to really encourage people to think about their relationship with their dog in a really adversarial way. You know, if it was about alpha this or pack that or whatever, it was like always this power struggle. And that was this big overarching thing that just irked me. And I think as soon as your dog is doing anything that inconveniences you remotely, if you start to perceive that as being some sort of power play and that you need to now like assert yourself and so on, I think it's really dangerous. And I think it's hard to measure, but I think it's been really, really harmful on like on a massive scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the most challenging things is, you know, you see television shows are highly edited. And so you're seeing like a really quick, you know, 30 seconds and they're picking out the most dramatic change in behavior, even if it's not done in a way that any of us would feel comfortable with. But that's what the audience at home is seeing. And so, you know, how many times have you gone into a client's house and they say to you, you know, proudly, I'm the alpha, and you know, my dog isn't allowed on the couch because I'm in charge and I'm the leader. And so there's all of these sound bites that personalities will come out with that sound funny, or maybe they sound smart because they're said with such authority. And I think the dangerous thing is the application when people who really just don't know any better in their own homes are trying to apply some of these techniques.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that we do practically every day is just not quite as sexy in a lot of cases. Now I know like TV can do a lot, like we can cut and edit and do things in a really great way and make it super appetizing. You know, I'm sure we could do the same things that are happening and it could be in the other direction and still be like an exciting watch. But I think a lot of the lore and myth and the quick fixes, I think it's often framed as such, even if it wasn't. And then, you know, you might be on TV saying like, hey, this isn't a quick fix, but it could be edited in such a way that leans into that or leans away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest challenge with doing things in terms of training ethically. Mm-hmm. And it is effective training, what we're doing, positive reinforcement. It's just not flashy. And, you know, I think that, you know, how do we make this more appealing to audiences to compete with that type of thing, that type of market? I don't have the answers for it, to be honest with you. Otherwise, we would probably be doing it. I think that there are a lot of positive reinforcement trainers that are trying so hard to reach people in different ways, right? So we know that there's some great podcasts. We know that, you know, YouTube is another, you know, I almost lump that in with sort of TV training because I Definitely. Think some of the factors are the same. What do you think about YouTube and the parallels to the TV industry anyways?
I think YouTube is amazing. And if I could go back 12 years and focus the same energy on YouTube that I have on television, like I think I would be in a much, much like personally happier position because TV is great. You reach a large audience very quickly. and then poof, it goes away. You know what I mean? It's not like people are rewatching, whereas I feel like YouTube has so much life and the ability for content to be evergreen and for you to really impact people, you know, who maybe someone's at the dog park and the dog's not coming and someone says, oh my gosh, have you seen Emily Larlam, like Kiko Pup? It's a great channel. And it's just so easy to share with your friends. I think dog trainers on YouTube, especially, you know, our community, they're so approachable. And so I love YouTube. It's something that I just have a lot on my plate and I really haven't focused on, but I just think it's an amazing platform and it's not going anywhere. What do you think, Don?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think there's, and I do sometimes feel like there's some great sort of force-free content on there, but I would just eat up more and more. And then even with under the umbrella of like force-free R plus content, there's still like a lot of variety. I think there's still like all these different voices. And there's so much, I feel like there's a huge niche there because we can continue to put out a lot of similar content, but start to appeal to like younger generations, older generations, like these demographics, mm-hmm. that. And that right now it still feels like there's, you know, just sort of a collection of voices there. And there could be so many more that could really, you know, appeal to a greater range of people than they do right now.
Yeah, I think that there really is some resistance and fear that's involved with entering the YouTube market as a positive reinforcement trainer. I mean, I could be speaking for myself, but I think a few people I've spoken to too, you know, they don't want to be criticism and being targeted and, you know, drama and things like that can happen because of comments and things like that. Mm. It's tough. You know, we already are in a highly emotional sort of line of work. So I don't know, what are your takes on that? Is that where you're seeing some resistance from positive reinforcement trainers?
Definitely. I mean, I think speaking for myself, coming from a television background, I feel there's so much pressure. Like when I'm on TV, I mean, I have somebody that does my hair and makeup and I have a nice background and I have beautiful cameras and I've got support and someone behind the camera to make dog like look into the lens. And, you know, there's just so much more support when you have the big production budgets that when you're trying to just self-produce with your iPhone and you want to create content that's good, that's engaging, that has, you know, quality editing. I think that sometimes perfectionism becomes this, you know, block where, at least for me, that's my biggest struggle is, you know, I don't want to put it out there. Like I people are going to be like, oh my God, like look at her shitty apartment. And you know what I mean? Like her place is a mess. I mean, you guys are seeing like the one clean section of my place, but the reality is like, we don't live in a TV studio. And sometimes I just think there's this just kind of almost like nervous, like self-consciousness where we want the public to perceive us as being as professional as possible. And it's hard to do that within the confines of a low budget YouTube project.
It's really, really demanding too. I mean, I'm sure you'd agree coming from a TV background, like you're talking about just a ton of staff, like so many specified jobs to take care of so many details. A few years ago, I took a bit of a run at YouTube with a friend of mine who has a film production background. And he's like, I've got some time off between contracts. Let's just go for it. And it was an incredible learning experience. And mostly like the biggest thing that I walked away from was really having a significantly greater appreciation for the amount of labor that goes into producing a piece of content that is like informative and like, it's so easy for things to feel cheap. And then maybe it's also your own perspective because you're gonna be looking at it with like a fine tooth comb. You're gonna see all of the funny sorts of things, but you know, he was capable of shooting things and editing them in ways that were pretty great and throwing animations on top. So it did like, it had a bit of a polished thing, but it still took us, we produced a couple of 6-minute videos and it took us like a full work week to produce each one of them. We were writing and brainstorming and scouting locations and scripting and rehearsing and, you know, 2 days of shooting, post-production. It was, and that was eventually what actually was a bit discouraging for me, is I was like, I need a bit more money behind this and a bit more help. Like there's a lot of labor. And when you're taking most of it on yourself or even just in a partnership with one other person, and he did so much of that, you know, I got expertise in the face on camera. He did most of the labor. It was still really, really demanding. And I think that's a huge sort of prohibitive feature of producing YouTube content that you feel proud of and that you want people to, you know, share all over the place and talk about in the dog park.
Yeah, especially when you think about like how quickly dogs move, and they're not, if you want authentic action, the dogs aren't going to repeat things. So you really need somebody behind the lens. Like, it's not like you can just do a selfie, because you actually like need your whole body language to be focused on training the dog. And so you need someone that's at a distance who can really capture, you know, everything in the moment, because, and we deal with this when we're doing TV training as well. It's like the dogs aren't going to give you a second take unless they're this one. Who's a right. professional actress.
I think you're lucky. Look at this today.
She's killing this live stream right now. Like, she's just really.
Hopefully, I mean, hopefully people like, watching aren't falling asleep.
Yeah, this is what Delilah thinks of our blog.
But another thing, you guys, about YouTube as well, is I think that this before and after dramatic stuff, which I think does resonate with the television aspect of, you know, these dramatic before and afters, right? And I think, you know, most positive reinforcement trainers are not, we're not setting dogs up to fail. So we don't see them have these gigantic explosions. At least we don't want to put them in those situations, right? So, you know, I think there are creative ways for positive reinforcement trainers to maybe obtain video prior to working with a client. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I think we might need to start doing that.
Well, I'll say that that was a really big challenge in shooting my show. So I have, you know, for anybody who's new or whatever, who doesn't know who I am, I got a show coming out called Dog Masters. I don't know when, because I'm not allowed to announce the network, but we did shoot 2 seasons of it. And going into it, our creator, Jamelio, he actually produced Dog Whisperer series. So obviously there's a very different approach in our training styles. And for Jim and a lot of the crew who had worked on that series, you know, they had a formula of like, we're going to get to the person's house and we're going to get the bad behavior. And then you're going to come in and you got an hour and a half and you're going to fix it. And we're going to just show, you know, this huge transformation after you've spent 45 minutes with the family. And so when you're going into a situation like that and you're working with a team who's used to doing things a certain way, I feel like that's where, as a positive trainer, like, we have to get creative. So of course, you know, we would request, okay, can you try to get the behavior beforehand? I mean, no one wants to go into a situation where the dog's cortisol level is here, and no one wants to put a dog through anything unnecessary. So with our show, we did request video footage, because it kind of becomes this challenge, you know, for the audience. And this is something that when my show comes out, you know, there'll probably be a conversation about, is like, as positive trainers, we have to show some type of transformation, as much as, you know, we don't want to put a dog through something twice. If the audience can really see the before and after, but with a training approach that comes from a positive science-based, you know, is it worth maybe a few seconds of, you know, uncomfortable stress for the purposes of creating a show? And I think that's a very challenging ethical dilemma when you're making a dog training show, because if you don't show the audience, you know, here's what the dog normally looks like pulling and lunging or whatever on the leash, they're not going to really be as impressed by what they see at the end. And, you know, you can do a season of, as we say, like, our boring positive training, but if the audience doesn't watch it, like, we're not going to get any more shows. So I think for us, it was very much like kind of a Lima philosophy of, how do we set these dogs up for success as best we can? You know, let's try to get footage. And nowadays, the cool thing is that with iPhones, like, a lot of the families we work with really did have good footage. So we were able to, you know, take that and use that in the episodes, but it's tricky. And we can go further into it, but there's a lot of challenges to doing positive training right in a television format, but I think we can do it. And I'm pretty proud of a lot of what we were able to do with our show. So we'll see if anyone ever sees it.
No, we have to see it.
Do you think there's room for content that doesn't lean so heavily on the before footage? Like, I think sometimes, you know, people are just really excited and engaged just to, like, learn more about dogs and dog behavior, and that if there's some sort of problem and solution aspect to it that kind of works with the, like, a lot of the existing sort of model of, like, we're going to visit people and we're going to resolve some issues. you know, I wonder if it's totally breaking from leaning into that before and after like problem solution thing, and maybe it becomes more of a educational approach. You know, we're doing some practical training, but we're also like talking about dog behavior and cutting to other things and learning about, like, you know, who are the researchers doing, you know, some of the most current science and dog cognition. And, you know, we kind of go broad, because I think so much of what I'm really excited about in dog training, some of it revolves around that in-person practical stuff, but there's just so much like interesting things going on in the world of dog behavior and cognition and training and how that all informs. I feel like maybe there could be an opportunity. I think that the before and after is a sexy, you know, appetite sort of thing. But I wonder if there's room to produce content that would be successful that does have a bit of a departure from that format.
I mean, I definitely think there's room. It's a matter of getting a network and getting a production company on board, because right. I think for all of us, like, we think science is sexy, like all of the different research and studies, like they're super cool. And I, you know, one of the things that I talked about, and I don't know if they'll do it in post, but I was like, what if we had those pop-up bubbles? Like, remember on VH1, the pop-up video, where you'd have like the fun little thought bubbles. And I was like, oh, it'd be really cool if we could just put some dog nerd knowledge in little pop-up bubbles to make it fun and hip and kind of like, you know, edited in more of a music video style where we make the science, you know, fun and we bring it to life. So, I mean, we'll see. I think, you know, one of my, one of the things that I say kind of with doing the show is we're shaping the industry. We have to, just like we, you know, try to shape dogs, we have to shape the entertainment industry. We have to take these opportunities, even if we are not 110% like, yeah, this is the way to do it. We've got to put ourselves out there to start shaping the industry to show them how fun and creative our training styles can be. Because if we're not willing to put ourselves out there, you know, there's plenty of people who just want to be on TV and that's all they care about at the end of the day. So, and I think, like, to your point, Don, everything you're talking about, if we could maybe as trainers, like, do more collaboration and think, okay, maybe we all self-fund some projects, you know, putting together things on YouTube, who knows, maybe you can get network attention and then create, you know, a concept that starts on YouTube that is bought and sold as a series. So that's an idea too.
Yeah, cool.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I wanna shift gears a little bit, you guys, and talk about, you know, and this does relate to an upcoming show, which we are not going to name, but the, you know, it is quite dramatic to think that, you know, certain dogs are last chance dogs, right? Like, oh my gosh, if this trainer doesn't fix them, then they're actually going to die. And I think that that's a common sort of perception about dogs that have severe behavior challenges. Don, what are your thoughts about the types of methods that are typically employed in these situations for last chance dogs? Yeah, I know it's a bit of a loaded question, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think the last chance dog sort of scenario opens the door to, like, they're going to die or else, you know, I think it justifies, like, whatever sort of methods follow, you know, and even if something might seem harsh, you're like, well, this is the cost of a greater good. And can I think really make it a, I don't know. I don't know all about all of the methods. Like, I know about training methods. I don't consume much of this television. I don't watch those shows. I'm not going to watch this next one. Like, it's just going to freak me out.
No.
But I can imagine, you know, I know what's popular out there. I know what I don't love that's out there that is quite popular. I am aware more of, like, big social media accounts that promote the sort of stuff that seems in line with it all. And I think the framing of it, I see a lot of stuff on social media always saying, like, hey, you know, owners were ditched by three previous trainers before they found me. And there's a lot of framing that, like, you know, feeds into a bit of a hero narrative. And I think also really validates things that could be uncomfortable, but you suspend your sort of discomfort because it's worth it in the end, because this dog was in a dire situation. I mean, I know, like, we all know, and I'm sure tons of people listening know, that a lot of these methods, like, they don't really heal issues. You know, they can suppress, you know, some of the stuff that we've been having an issue with, but they're, it's not like a real recovery. And I think we know this, like we think, being like the general population, we think that maybe we're seeing results when it comes to dogs, but we know with people who have, you would never expect like a war veteran to just like bounce back after a bit of shock therapy or something, you know, like we know that the trauma really sticks around, and we don't have the same expectations for maybe more relatable situations. Mm-hmm. So if these dogs are in really tough places, I don't know. I think we're just selling a false idea of what like a remedy is and what success is. And I think it's really problematic because it also sells a false narrative that people then consume and buy into because it's wrapped into like a seductive story. And we love stories, you know, like put it into like a really wonderful story and we'll gobble it up. And a lot of like facts start to get, you know, lodged into your way of thinking about these things. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I actually answered your question.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest challenges as well is we don't see what happens after the show ends. You know, all you see is the final, you know, resolution on that particular episode, but you don't see what happens when the cameras go home and the trainer's not there and this, you know, dog is, you know, in a home. And a lot of these families have children. I mean, we don't really see the fallout that happens after the cameras go home. So I think that's one of the, you know, sad things that I really hope this next series, you know, I haven't seen it, so I can't really speak to it yet. I think we're all kind of, you know, waiting and hoping, you know, just, I don't know. I think I really hope that this series is maybe, if it's not too late, that this, I don't know, that this trainer kind of comes to some conferences and learns a different way. I know that there was another show that one of the trainers who was kind of under fire ended up reaching out to one of the best voices in our industry for support. And so it'll be interesting to see the evolution with that show. But I mean, I think that's one of the important things for us as trainers to kind of talk about is we're all still learning, you know what I mean? And most, you know, I started out positive, but a lot of people were balanced and crossed over. And I think that's kind of the challenge for our industry is how do we connect with these trainers in a way where we use positive reinforcement on the people and we try to inspire and empower them to learn from, you know, our methodology rather than, you know, I think that we have to be very careful about bullying certain trainers whose styles we don't agree with because that's not going to get us. The big picture is this is about the dogs. So how do we get to that goal of helping as many dogs collectively as possible? Because I think, you know, the hard thing is if you asked any of these trainers that we don't agree with, I'm sure that they think that they're doing everything right. You know what I mean? And I'm sure that they love dogs. And so we have to be compassionate with the other trainers as well as with the dogs.
And that's, I mean, I think that that's really difficult, but now that I sort of put myself in maybe their position, they're likely surrounded by people that are telling them that they are doing everything awesome. They're helping these dogs. And if you're surrounded by yes people, then of course you're not going to necessarily evolve. And yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have a real difficult time with people taking money when it comes to dogs and the possible implications without thoroughly vetting the information that they are portraying to a large audience. But again, like I'm, you know, as I get older, I'm trying really hard to understand other people's perspectives. And I think you have some excellent points. And, you know, just how do we get there is the question, right?
And I think there's a real conundrum there. Like I want to so thoroughly embody the R plus approach to reinforcing all the people for all the things, you know, to inspire them to shape their behavior by offering really interesting consequences, you know, like let them kind of gravitate to. And yet I feel like so much of social media is literally just designed, like the whole environment of social media platforms do thrive off controversy. And do thrive off of a lot of things that I think maybe we can just do a lot better at. But I really get the feeling that other forms of training that we don't practice do seem to have a bit of an edge in certain platforms. And even if mm-hmm. part of that is us kind of coming in there and be like, no, you but, you know, like we need to have our voices heard. And I think there's like good reason to like take up space in social media spaces, just having like dissenting voices, you know, just saying like, hey, that might not be the best thing, because I think sometimes people, you know, they just read the comments, they see the content and they don't hear an alternative. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I think it gets complicated for me too when I think about so many things that have been happening in the world, especially in the past year in terms of protest, you know, where sometimes mm-hmm. like the best thing is like you need to make some noise and there's going to be some uncomfortable feelings and it may not always feel super like R plus like, but it's advocating and it's controversial and it gets eyes and it stimulates conversation. And I think there's, I toy with this all the time. I mean, sometimes I get a little pissed off online. I get a little like spicy with some comments or a post or something because I'm really agitated and I'm trying to like speak to something that I think is important. And I'm really struggling with wrapping it in a really lovely package. Like it's a bit edgy sometimes. And that really resonates with some people. And I feel like it's really successful in a lot of ways. And I think there's a way of, I don't know, you know, I just struggle sometimes with trying to embody like the care and compassion that I bring to like people that I work with and their dogs mm-hmm. and carrying that exact same amount of like empathy and compassion and caring to social media interactions. I feel like it's not as successful maybe. And I feel like when I am a little bit like edgier or feel a little like more controversial, it does seem to be more successful. And then I wonder if that's ultimately a better goal, you know, if we were more successful in kind of leaning into that, even if it started to feel not super aligned with my philosophies when it comes to people and their dogs. I toil with this one like all the time. This is like my number one social media thing that keeps me up at night.
I'm so with you. And as somebody who's like been in the media, there's just, I feel this pressure that like somebody has to speak up. And just to your conversation, if you see my shirt, I'm wearing the Lily Chin Resist shirt. Awesome. I thought it was apropos for today. You know, at the end of the day, I think, Don, I don't know. I guess for me, and kind of because I have a big voice, I'm Puerto Rican, I've never had an issue with speaking out. It kind of depends on like who's on the other end. And what are their intentions? And are they coming from a place where they just don't know any better? Or is there an arrogance of they just don't care? You know what I mean? I think that's kind of a big thing. But at the end of the day, like, we are the voice for our dogs. Yeah. Our dogs and dogs collectively as a society, like if we don't speak up and if we don't try to change behavior overall, the dogs are the ones that are going to suffer. So, you know, at the end of the day, like it always comes back to the dogs, but what's the best path?
Yeah.
I mean, a big part of what we do, or a lot of us do, is advocacy, you know, and if you're advocating for something, against injustices, it is really hard to have an R plus, you know, hey, everybody like me, and I'm not going to say anything negative. But when I do take a look I just think that there really is value in what some people are doing in terms of showing the public, hey, you can do this, and this is, you know, going to have detrimental effects, but I can achieve the same result with this type of training with no side effects. So I know there are some comparison stuff that's going on, you know, video wise in terms of TikTok. I do think it's powerful. I'm too chicken to do it myself, but I think the people, it is. You're in the trenches and you've got to have the stomach for it. I don't. I found that out early on. I do not. And so I support people who are doing it because it is the hard work. And I really do think it is necessary, because what we've been doing thus far hasn't really been working, I think. I mean, I think we're slowly edging away, and then we get kicked with this new TV show, for example. And and it's easy for us all to recoil and think, what's the point? You know, why bother? Because I'm not making any difference. At least that's what I was saying to myself last week. And then I was like, no way. I'm going to have two people on here. We're going to talk about it. You know, because I think that, I feel you, Dawn. And I really, I don't think change comes easily.
Yeah.
Just doesn't.
Yeah, it's tough. I've been dabbling in TikTok a little bit, and I have to tell you, it's wild. I feel like I'm really old. I don't know, TikTok is old. But it, I think it really, the whole format of it feels like it really encourages like hate watching, you know, like it's like, if you're presented with train wrecks and you watch them, TikTok is like, here's another one, here's another one. And it's, I think I've been on, I'm feeling like I'm on both sides of that. I've been like, this app is insane. Like, I don't like any of this stuff. Is there any R plus stuff even here? And then gradually the algorithm kind of gets to know you. And I'm seeing a ton of it now, but I'm also having posted, I've posted like 10 videos in 3 months or something, but I've got some like intense vitriol. And I feel like I'm on the receiving end too, where people, like people will be like, why are you on my For You page again? And I'm like, because you keep commenting on my content, like get out of here. And I think the whole, so I think it's really set up to kind of, depending on how you sort of interact, if you're gonna really feed the algorithm stuff that you really like watching versus stuff that you really hate watching, but keep watching. Mm-hmm. And then you even try to just keep it super clean and be like, hey, this is the science, this is why I do that. Bashing seems to be a really common word that's been that you know is a real favorite. Whereas it doesn't matter like what you do, any sort of criticism is just really violently coming after somebody, and it's hard to sometimes absorb that and be like, oh man, I put a lot of thought into that post and my tone and delivery, and then everyone's just like, why are you just out here bashing other trainers and this, you know? And I'm like, I don't know, I think we need to pull out a dictionary here because your definition is different than mine of bashing.
Bashing and bullying. And I mean, it's just such a highly emotional thing, you know, working with dogs and, you know, both sides think they're right. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's really tough.
I tell you what I'd like to see, Don, and because I need to check out your TikTok channel now because I feel like I'm too old for it, but maybe I'll try. But you know, with this new show and certain shows that are out, I think it'd be really interesting to, you know, the cool thing is with technology, we can take a piece of that show and do reaction videos and show, here's this way, here's my way, let me show you my way. And I think rather than just a verbal bashing, let's show and tell. Let's show like, well, okay, this is how you deal with a reactive dog. I'm going to show you how I do it. You know, one of my proudest moments on the show that I just wrapped is I was at this like spay neuter. It was just a big adoption day. And so there was a husky and the dog, they were trying to give it a vaccination, the Bordetella, which goes in the nose, and the dog is struggling. And there's like five vet techs and they're like, you know, just totally like MMA wrestling this poor dog, trying to get a muzzle on it. And I was like, okay, this is my opportunity. Like, how do I make this fun? I have to make this fun, because that's the only way that it's going to really hit home. So I like said to a PA, I said, go get me ice cream and a spatula from like the CVS. And so they go and I said, give me an empty syringe. And I literally in a half an hour was just like, I taught a touch to the spatula using ice cream. Cause I'm like, this is the most, this dog's cortisol levels are here. There's a camera crew. There's all these people. This dog is so stressed out. I of course did the disclaimer that ice cream is not a healthy training reinforcement, but I was like, I need to make this fun and visual. And so I basically, you know, conditioned the dog to accept a touch on the nose with the spoon. And eventually I had ice cream in a syringe, and, you know, fast forward 30 minutes, I'm administering Bordetella, and giving the dog ice cream. And then I go off and I play tug with the dog in the parking lot with no restraint, no muzzle. And so I think like we need to get creative as a training community and think about what are common things that common people struggle with, and how do we deal with it in a way that is not only science-based, but is also fun and entertaining to watch, because that's what's going to start getting shares. So that's my plea to the training community is like, let's all, you know, collectively band together and try to make positive training as entertaining as possible.
Yeah. And you know, Dawn, I think you're actually really good at that side of things too, because your pizza and croissant recalls are like, they're so fun. So I think, you know, there's absolutely, you've been doing that stuff as well. So I think last note, you guys, that I would love for you to chat about before we start wrapping it up, because I know you have to go, is, you know, when people are watching these shows, what kind of advice would you give them to sort of, you know, navigate what they're seeing on TV and, you know, that type of thing?
Don's like, you start. Okay, I'll start. So I would say, I think one of the most misunderstood concepts is body language. And I know, Renee, you have your free body language course, which we are constantly, Christina and I are constantly like, please go learn about body
language. It's actually costing me a fortune at this point with all the enrollments. It's okay. It's totally fine. It's for the greater good.
I mean, I think that that's the biggest thing is like, you know, look at the body language of the dog and, you know, is the dog being quiet? Is the dog not jumping or barking or whatever, you know, the challenge behavior issue is? But look at the body language and how relaxed and how comfortable and how happy and how at peace does that dog look? And I feel like the more we can educate not just adults, but children, teenagers, we really have to just around the country, because I feel like there has been such a disservice from that certain television show that aired for so long, where, oh, the dog is being calm and submissive, you know, and people see a dog who is like, you know, their head is freaking like hung and their tail is like tucked, you know, quivering between their legs. And your average person might look at that dog and think, oh, that dog is being so calm and good. Look at it, you know, versus a dog that's happy and relaxed and, you know, engaged, making eye contact, like all of the things. If people only understood, then I think they would have a much better ability to discern, you know, what can I try at home? What's safe from what I'm seeing on television? What do you think, Don?
I totally agree. I feel like there's so much that flies as like credible and effective. And I think if you had an audience with even like a slightly more tuned eye to stress signals, I mean, I feel like that the show we're talking about is, I mean, there's endless content if you want to like look at Seth's body language. You know, there's a whole, you know, there's seasons and seasons of it. I think that's a huge point. Like, I think if the audience was just a little bit more aware of what we could see is happening for the dog, because we all cringe, right? Like, once you open your eyes to even just like a little bit of body language, you start seeing it's just everywhere, but it's so easily missed. You know, I think a lot of it's really easy to see when a dog is really devastated, you know, it's like really cowering and in fear and pain. You know, that's undeniable, I think, for most people. And when they're absolutely like full of joy, it's also quite obvious, I think, to any human. It's hard to misinterpret that, but there's just so much in the middle that is it's just so easy to ignore. And if somebody just says, yeah, this dog is calm and doing well, I think a lot of the audience is just like, okay, yes, they are, you know, without really right. much. And I think it would really change the whole read of the show. You know, anybody who knows anything about dog body language reads shows like that in a very different way than I think the bulk of the audience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally agree with you.
Excellent advice to people watching. Hopefully they have a critical eye when they are taking a look at this. But to wrap things up, you guys, first, thank you for joining me today and sharing your wisdom. But please tell our audience where they can find you and if you've got anything exciting coming up that you'd like to share. Lauren.
Lauren Nativo on Instagram at Lauren Nativo or at Nativo Pet Family. Same thing on Facebook. On Clubhouse, that's like my new jam. I'm excited to get both of you onto Clubhouse. So I'm at Dog Trainer on Clubhouse. But as far as what's exciting, I am super excited. This will be like the first time I publicly share this, but I'm getting ready to launch my own nonprofit in honor of my little heart, Preston, the Preston's Planet Foundation. And we're basically creating a program to train service dogs for women and children and people who suffer from PTSD that are not in the military. I feel like there's a huge opportunity to help people who've gone.
Amazing. I don't know what happened really to proud. Your sound. Well, there we go.
Can you hear
there
me now? Go. Sorry, I got a phone call. I was like, stop.
No.
yeah, I've been doing a lot of therapy dog work and training service dogs for over a decade, but it's always just been, you know, something that I've done in addition to, you know, the rest of my world. But now I'm kind of, I lost my Preston and I want to honor him. So that's sort of my goal for 2021 is to get a foundation set up and to, you know, try to do good in his honor, to paw it forward for not only dogs, but for people. We really focused on the human animal bond. And a lot of what we talked about today with education is going to play into some of our efforts. So I'm excited. I can't wait to share with you guys once we have a little bit more going on.
That's amazing. That's so cool. Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Don. Tell us about you. What do you have going on?
So it's Don Hutton, but my business is Running Dogs. And so Running Dogs TO on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram's where my platform of choice. So you can check me out there. I've also just started a neat little small project that I'm hoping will continue to put some energy behind and watch it grow. I have a little like catchphrase that I've been using for a while to like give your dog a raise, mostly just trying to encourage people to sort of step it up in terms of, rate of reinforcement, types of reinforcement, but then just going even bigger picture and just thinking about, you know, trying to provide our dogs with lots of like enrichment opportunities and go for those longer walks and all of that sort of good stuff. So recently I got some hoodies made here with this great bulldog logo.
Yeah. I need and, one.
I think it's a really great logo. A friend of mine helped me with that. And I didn't even ask about like a bulldog. He was like, hey, let me see if I've got a few designs. As soon as he came back with that, it felt so serendipitous because I had recently just been in touch with or just recently gotten to know Benevolent Bully Rescue, which is a rescue in the Toronto area that focuses on bully breeds and is so focused on force-free everything and really supporting people and the dogs and long foster stays to really get to know dogs before placing. They're really just doing everything that I wish every rescue would do. I got this logo with a bulldog on it. I said, look, we've got to make something happen here. So we're selling these hoodies online at giveyourdogaraise.com and 30% of all of our profits go straight to Benevolent Bully so that they can continue to do all the awesome work that they're doing.
I love that. Count me in. I'm going to go order as soon as we get off.
Amazing.
Amazing. So to wrap things up, you guys, this will be on the podcast, and we have had over 200,000 downloads over the course of, I think, 70 episodes. Dawn was my first guest that I had on the Bravo Dog Knowledge, on the Bravo Dog Knowledge podcast. Little did I know that it would become such a passion project. It really was a way. It was actually it's kind of therapeutic for me because it gives me a voice in this world, and I can talk about almost anything I want without too much fear of repercussion, which is nice. But also, you know, helping dog owners navigate living with their dogs and all fun stuff like that. So thank you guys, both of you, for being here for that. And thanks for joining us on today's episode. I think hopefully it's helpful to a lot of people, so thank you very much.
Thank you. It's such a great podcast. Like, it's so exciting to hear about this, like, milestone and that you've got so many episodes. I mean, I've been following along and it's incredible. It's been a bit of time now, hasn't it? Like, podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing and so deserved.
Yeah, totally.
Well, they say that podcasts, I think, once if you don't pass like maybe 5 episodes, it usually tanks and it dies, right? So it's like, I gotta keep doing it. I've gotta keep doing it just to keep it alive, right? So far it's been worth it. But thank you for your support, you guys both. And we will see you guys soon, right?
Absolutely.
Love you, Renee. Yeah. On behalf of the training community, thank you for using your voice. You're amazing, and I'll support you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Bravo Dog Knowledge Podcast. Again, thank you so much for the 200,000 downloads over all the episodes so far. I never ever thought that it would become what it has become. So hopefully you have a passion project as well, because that's what this has been for me, and it's been incredibly rewarding so far. You can find me on Instagram at Bravo Dog Training. And if you enjoyed this episode, please go ahead, give us a 5-star review via Apple Podcasts, and we'll see you next time.